just trying to get by. Some people like that hurt. Some just rather say goodbye. Bye.
Encuentro Radio es periodismo, derechos, igualdad, dignidad, mujeres, inclusión, masculinidad, arte, expresión, libertad, esperanza, cultura, ecumenismo, literatura, historia y análisis. Pero en realidad somos una gran familia. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas a Encuentro Radio. Comunícate con nosotros a través de nuestro WhatsApp 302-521-2342. Aquí comienza un programa de Encuentro Radio.
From Colombia,
the Philippines,
the United States,
Germany,
Kenya,
Austria,
we are bringing our voices together to reflect on gender and social justice.
A multicultural look in the mirror at our society.
Welcome to Mirror Voices,
Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Colombian time.
Brought to you by CEPALC and Encuentro Radio.
Looking into the shadow, now I notice the light. welcome back to another episode of Mirrored Voices here on Encuentro Radio, the digital radio station for CEPALC. Today we are listening to the music of Willow Smith, also known as Willow. She's Will Smith's daughter, but has had a career in music for many years, starting from when she was really just a kid still, and she's grown a lot in that music style and artistic style. We just listened to Symptom of Life, a song of hers that came out like last month, I think around March 12th or so, about a month ago. And so we'll be listening to more of Willow's music today on Mirrored Voices. And today we are here with Michelle. How are you doing today?
Good, Hannah. I feel like I'm about to catch a cold or something.
Oh, no.
But I'm good. It's been very cold lately.
It has. And today there's a lot of sun, too. It's Bogota is going through a strange drought season where it feels like it should rain every day, and then it doesn't.
And then
every day it just doesn't rain. And so tomorrow, if you're like us and in the Teusaquillo locality, as well as many others, the water will be shut off for a day, and then the next day a different area, and then the next day a different area as a way to try to conserve water and make sure that there's enough, because currently there is not for the whole city. So hopefully that goes well tomorrow.
Yeah, hopefully.
And we are here with Mariana as well. Welcome. How have your classes been? How was your morning?
Hello. Not so good because my menstruation arrived this morning.
Were you prepared or was it?
Yeah. I have everything in my bag, but I feel so tired. I'm like, I just want to be in my bed, but I have to come. I need be here with you guys. But I'm okay. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you here.
Thank you, too.
And Phoebe, welcome back to Bogota. How are you doing?
It actually does feel like I've been away for ages, even though it was really
it was only like a week.
It's like one of those paradigm shifts in your life of like the time before and the time after. So I feel like a whole new person. But I'm doing great. I'm buzzing. I actually finished my menstruation yesterday or the day before. So I'm like at the right at the start of the month where everything is just
ready.
So good.
Yeah.
I'm like buzzed.
And so that's one of the main things we want to talk about today. Not menstruation. We've done plenty of programs on menstruation. We can do more. That's fine. But speaking more specifically on those workshops that Phoebe was participating in the Cordoba, the coastal region in Colombia. This was your first time doing those workshops in that region. So what was your experience? Anything you want to share with us about maybe first your experience there, and then later on we can go into more of like the topics that you covered.
Sure. I think it was very much a steep learning curve. I mean, for a start, it's a lot hotter than Bogota, and it's a lot hotter than the UK. It was like a consistent 35 degrees, so I didn't love that, but thankfully wherever we were there was aircon, which felt like a small miracle. Because I think I would have probably not died but I would have struggled a lot with the heat. And it was, I don't know, I think it, again, kind of like with the Boyaca workshops, I very much went in with an open mind and not expecting a lot. And I think it's something I've talked about before, about being in Colombia and being like very obviously not Colombian, but oh my goodness, did I feel
especially there.
And it was an interesting experience because, I mean, lots of people told me it was the first time they'd met someone from Europe, which was crazy to me that I was representing an entire continent. But I think that to me was a little bit of a shock as well, was like how I just think how surprised people were to see someone who looked like me. But everyone was so friendly, and it was just a really amazing experience, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yay, I'm so glad. Hopefully you get more opportunities to travel before you have to leave Colombia.
I hope so.
And so what were some of the topics that you covered in the workshops there?
Yeah, so a lot of what we were doing was working with mainly school children, so probably around like teenage 13 to maybe 18. And with different schools, we covered different things, but with the majority of the time, we were talking about women's rights, talking about kind of encouraging the girls to, particularly the girls, but the boys as well, to think about the role of women and how women should have opportunities beyond being mothers and wives. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a lot of girls, by the time they're my age, which is 22, will have already had children, mm-hmm. which, you know, for some people is the right thing, but for others, they kind of just get pegged into this role of motherhood and being a housewife, essentially. So we were talking about different opportunities. And I was with Jessied, who works with Subhalk, and a lot of what we were talking about my experiences of what it is to be an independent woman, to be someone who has their own money, who does what they want to do, who is essentially not dependent or dependable on anyone else. Mm-hmm. So that was I have a lot of complex feelings around that whole kind of situation, but that was the majority of the time what we're talking about. We also talked a little bit about sexuality, about women's sexuality, and about the right to have sexual pleasure, to enjoy sex, and also to know how to have safe sex as well, which is very important.
Yeah, a lot of times there are these patterns of, I mean, I think if people choose to become mothers or want to have a family, that's fine, that's great, but it should be a choice. Yeah. And often it's kind of just like automatic of that's what happens at a very young age. And then in some of these communities that Sepulk works with, you have women that are in their 30s and their grandmothers.
Yeah,
which to me always blows my mind because I'm 28 and not ready to have kids yet, mm-hmm. let alone to be a grandmother or to be taking care of my daughter's children. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very different way of life, which if you choose that, fine. If you don't really have a choice in that, or if that's just automatically what's expected of you, that's where I think it's not okay.
Yeah, for sure. And I was definitely surprised about how much of a revelation it seemed to be to a lot of these girls that motherhood was not a necessity for me. Motherhood was not the like one trajectory that I have for my life.
Right.
And when Jessie was like, Phoebe, would you like to have children? I was like, maybe one day in the future, who knows? Or do you want to get married? Maybe one day in the future, who knows? So many of the girls are like, what?
Yeah.
You have a choice and you've decided that that's not what you want right now.
Mm.
And I mean, again, this is one of the complexities that I feel as coming from someone who is not Colombian and who has a lot of privilege in my country and in the world, is like trying not to pass judgment,
mm-hmm.
and trying not to say like, you know, that's how on earth can people still think like that, because that's not helpful and it's not right. But also at the same time, trying to challenge these conceptions that these girls have and show them that there is a whole world out there where women in their 30s are very happily not married and happily don't have children and are living their best life, and we're in their 40s, 50s, 60s doing whatever they want and are not kind of at the beck and call of a man. So yeah, it was very interesting. And like, again, all of these experiences, it's not just about going and doing to the people, but learning from as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I learned a lot from that experience about privilege and trying to navigate that very fine line between trying not to exacerbate neocolonialism and also trying to make a change in the world. So that was tricky.
I guess for like the apart parts of Colombia, like that part, it's so difficult to understand that we don't want to be mother so like early, because they're like the conception here in Colombia also that the woman need to be mother.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea for the woman, and that's the idea for the family. Because for us, like in Colombia, it's so important to have a family, because if you know a Colombian family, you notice that there's a lot of people, because for a lot of years, you have your parents or your grandparents said that you need to continue with your family. Mm-hmm. Your family is the most important thing that do you have, more than your future, more than your career, and all these things. So that idea that you need to conform a family, obviously, if you want, it's okay. But that idea that the woman just exists for be mothers, that continue happen. And obviously, here in Bogota and in other cities like Medellin, Cali, Barranquilla, we have the opportunity to have education. We have a good education, and there's a lot of people here in Colombia and in Bogota that have like the public education, that it's different, like the private, but also you have the opportunity to train to know people like teacher or friend that said, in a moment, I don't want to be a mother. But for a lot of people, that's crazy. So that's why for a lot of people, it's so bad that we have the law for the abortion. Mm-hmm. Because you are like trying to kill your...
You're supposed to want...
Yeah. You're broke, that like the idea that you need to be a mother. So obviously, if you go to other parts so far, to Bogota, to the big cities, here in Colombia, you're going to listen to the girls, the little girls, and I want to get married, I want to be a mother, but so young. And a lot of people not have the opportunity to go to a university. And if they have the opportunity, like in other like part of Colombia, it's not so good, mm-hmm. because you study, but you don't have the opportunity to work on that. So you need to find a job in a call center, because that's the idea right now for the young people like me,
yeah.
in Colombia, because I am studying to be a teacher, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be a teacher, because there's a lot of friends that I know that study for be nurses, lawyers, and not have the opportunity. So for a lot of people and a lot of girls, it's more easy to say, like, I'm just going to be in house.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that was definitely one of the challenging aspects, was that kind of once we broached these topics and we'd kind of opened up this conversation, a lot of the girls talked about some of the dreams and ambitions that they have. And, I mean, there's a lot of different obstacles that prevent them from achieving mm-hmm. that. And one of them is just simply, like, the lack of opportunity,
yeah.
Which is something that is very hard to change. And I guess also there's... I was talking to one woman, young woman, I think she's similar age to me, and the challenge that she found of not finding the work that she wanted where she was.
Mm.
And there's a whole load of like different sociological, psychological reasons why someone might not want to leave where they're from.
Mm.
But that's another challenge where, like, for me, moving to a different city, moving to a different country for a job feels like what I would do, because for me to not have a job and not have my independence would be like losing my life.
Yeah.
But then there's these kind of like cultural context of like the importance of family and
yeah.
going somewhere which is completely unknown. And a lot of the girls talked about this fear of failure
mm.
and also this sense of shame that they had for being who they are and where they're from, which was so difficult to challenge, because I was like, you have nothing to be ashamed of, but that's so kind of embedded and internalized, especially like as part of internalized misogyny of
mm-hmm.
you're just the girl, you're just the woman, and you're just from Cordoba, like who would want to listen to you or who would want to employ you? And it's so difficult to kind of challenge that when it's been so deeply internalized. But then it was also kind of surprising and kind of made me laugh to talk to the boys as well.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when I told them that both my sisters own their own houses, and it's not... the house isn't in their husband's name,
mm-hmm.
and both of them have higher salaries than their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, what? Like, how is that possible? Which isn't normally the case in many couples,
yeah.
but I think for them it was also important to hear of women who didn't fit their kind of box
mm-hmm.
as to who a woman should be. So, again, like, lots of complexities which
yeah.
felt really difficult to challenge.
Yes. We are going to go on a short break with another song from Willow, and we will be right back.
I don't fucking know if it's a lie or it's a fact. All your little
That song was Transparent Souls. Willow has talked about this like stereotype or this box that especially young African-American or young black people in the U.S. face when it comes to art and music, of like, depending on your skin color, you're supposed to be in R&B and rap and pop and that type of music, which Willow has some songs that are kind of in that genre and mixed together, but personally, she says she enjoys that, like, punk rock, somewhat emo, and she even has a song that's called Emo Girl. But that kind of music was typically not for women, and typically not for women of color. And this idea of, like, and seeing her mom face similar struggles of, like, racism and stereotypes and, you know, what kind of music you can play based on your gender and based on your race, and wanting to kind of break some of those barriers or break some of that stereotype and be able to like make the music that you enjoy, that you like, that you know comes out of your own creativity. And Transparent Souls, I think, is a great example of that. So we were talking about some of the female empowerment and that kind of conversation as Phoebe was talking about in the workshops in Sepulc. In the coastal region in Cordoba. And so we have some other, as well, countries represented in some different situations on women's rights, women's independence, women's empowerment. And so let's start with Michelle. From your perspective in Zimbabwe, what does that situation look like?
Well, I don't particularly enjoy talking about this, but it's not really productive because, I mean, since like so many years ago, like after, like, well, Zimbabwe was part of the countries that were colonized by the British, sorry, Phoebe. And so, and so when we had that fight for independence, women fought alongside men. So the assumption was after we have gained independence, we're going to continue being like equals because we fought together and so we're one person. But it really didn't pan out that way. For example, this can be seen in like politics. Usually when women strive to get higher posts in political parties, they're faced with harassment and threats and stuff like that, like, you're a woman, why are you trying to do this? It's not something that women are supposed to do. You should just be content being like a minister of something and no more. And it's also seen in like how there are like certain gray areas in the laws, especially when it comes to like marriage. Like, for example, there are a lot of cases of child marriages. I remember last year but one, I read an article about a 9-year-old who died during childbirth. It was very sad and tragic, but then the person was the alleged husband. Nothing was done, like no legal thing, because it was like, oh, they're married under customary law, so yeah, it happened. It's unfortunate, but then, you know, and there's so many cases like that where children are forced to get married to like older men for tradition or for family things, for culture and stuff like that. And we also have a law which sort of like puts guidelines whereas terminating pregnancy is concerned. Like, I was actually impressed this other time when we were in a tertulia and we're talking about how Colombia has progressed in that area. And then I was wondering and thinking about my country, how it's not legal for someone to terminate pregnancy. Well, they try to sugarcoat it in a way to say, like, well, if someone is raped or if something tragic happens to a person, like maybe incest, yeah, you could probably get rid of the pregnancy legally, but then if you're like I got pregnant, but I'm not ready to be a mother, and I feel like it's my decision to terminate that pregnancy. You do not get that health service, like in the government clinics or hospitals, which is sad, really. And then there's also a law which makes it okay for things like marital rape and stuff like that. They'll be like, oh, he's your husband, so how can you say this person abused you? And as a result, there are also cases of gender-based violence, because it'll be like, the law is saying this man was within his rights, and then, but when we're like talking about it realistically, this person has been abusing this woman under this pretense. And so, yeah, that is like how the situation is in my country. It is very sad, and I mean, we're still fighting, even though we are yet to have someone like a female president candidate or a mayor like Bogota had, Claudia Lopez. But yeah, that is what I had to share today.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it seems like in a lot of different regions of the world, there are similar struggles when it comes to women's rights. And there are different ways of like addressing those struggles, culturally and politically and socially. But there's definitely a need to do that work.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the problem, is that you can say to women as much as you want, you should be independent, you should do what you want, but if the structures around you or the cultural norms around you don't allow you to do that, then what else can you do? And then you get all these other intersections of like class and race and all these different things, which just add barrier after barrier, which means that however internally you might feel about your independence or desire to be independent, it isn't always as simple as
that's
that.
The thing, like, I just thought about how you were saying a lot of these young adults were shocked that you were saying, I don't know if I want to get married, I don't know if I want to have kids. Like, in my country, if you are past 26, people start looking at you funny, like, okay, you're not married, you don't have a boyfriend. And then the relatives will be like coming at you and asking, what is wrong? Like, why haven't you met anyone yet? Do you need help? Like, let's go to like a sangoma, like a traditional healer, so that we find out like what is wrong with you, type of situation. At the same time, they'll be like, look at someone's child, like she got like pregnant. Yeah, it was like out of wedlock, but then I mean, now she's got a lot of babies running around, and you know, and here you are, like a spinster type of situation.
You just like, oh, I just enjoy my freedom.
You know, it's very hard to explain that, but I am grateful for my parents, because they're like, we don't expect you to like get married because of pressure, but get married because you want to get married, because you're ready, not because all those relatives are coming and they're asking, what is up with Michelle? Like, are they wedding bells in the air and stuff like that?
And I definitely saw that in the groups. I think in one of the schools, like the idea of like family relations and family support makes such a big difference, because one of the girls who said she lives with a single mother was the most vocal, was the most able to talk about, I'm going to have my own money, I'm going to pay for my own thing. And I was like, that kind of, for me, it was quite interesting that coming from a household which is a matriarchy instead of a patriarchy, and the difference in how she behaved compared to how the other girls behaved, who I guess had learned that they don't deserve to have a voice and they don't deserve to talk, was really interesting. So family obviously makes a difference.
Yeah, because I guess if you don't have your family trying to support you and you be like powerful and you have your own life, it's so difficult. Because actually there's like a lot of family here in Colombia that asking the girl like Sonia, what happened with the boyfriend? And it's like, I don't need a boyfriend. I have with myself. But obviously there's a lot of girls that continue worrying because they feel alone, they single. But that idea that be a single woman, it's so like scary for a lot of people. Because for my friends was like a surprise. I be single for 5 years. And it was like normal for me. because I'm working, I'm studying, I have my things, I'm powerful, I'm trying to help girl, but for my friends, like, but you don't want to have a boyfriend? I was like, what do you need to have a boyfriend? Mm-hmm. Right now, no, because obviously I'm working on that. But yeah, that idea, and actually in Colombia happened too, that all the women need found, like a boyfriend, you need to get married. Obviously, there's like a big difference, because obviously the young woman is trying to change that, but not in all the families.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, you notice, like especially with meeting, I remember meeting like my grandparents' friends or things like that, and they would introduce me like, oh, this is Hannah, yeah. Often, one of the first questions they ask is, oh, do you have a boyfriend? And I know that if, like, I had a brother or if I had, like, a male cousin, which actually on that side of the family, it's, like, all women, they wouldn't ask the same. No. They would, oh, do you have a girlfriend? Like, that's not considered an important detail about their identity. Whereas for women, that's often, like, you know, defining yourself by your relationship status. And especially if that relationship status is with a man. That's something that we don't we don't treat, you know, boys the same way in that sense.
There's also that thing where it's like, oh, you have to get married early so that you can have babies, because if you get married late, you're going to have complications with childbirth and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's best to just do it whilst you're young and then recover later type of situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no. No, thank you.
I know. It also, like, undermines how, like, how much of a job and how, like, hard motherhood is. Like, the reason that and there's a lot of reasons why I don't want to be a mother right now. Mm-hmm. One of them is because it's so hard. You have to give up so much of your time, so much energy, and I know that I don't want to do that. And I think I think people have been undervaluing motherhood for a long time, in terms of like how difficult it is and how important it is and what a sacrifice it is. But then kind of there's this expectation that you should be a mother, but not a kind of appreciation of how difficult that is. And I know that if I want to have a child and look after them properly, I need to be in a space where I can do that. It always seems to me that it's such an easy way to again undermine the importance of women and motherhood, to just be like, oh, when are you gonna have a baby, as if it's like, I don't know, like changing a light bulb. Like, it's not that easy.
I also hate, even like I notice with friends, it's like as soon as they get married, then the question is, oh, and when are you going to have children? Which I've tried to just take that entire question out of vocabulary. because I've had friends who have shared with me their struggles with, like, miscarriages and infertility, of, like, wanting to have children and not being able to, or of couples who just decide that they're happy together and they don't want to grow a family with children in that way. And so, like, I don't think it's necessary to justify those decisions or to share that trauma. But people will so often, especially to women, oh, and when are you going to have children? When are you going to have children? When are you going to have children?
Like, how many are you going to have?
Yeah. Like, can we not ask about my uterus? I think that's fine.
Yeah. And I guess I love babies. And right now I have my little cousin and I like doing everything with her. In the Sunday we go with my parents to the first hairstyle for her. But it's like so cute and I love so much, but I said my mom, right now for me this is not good, because I love baby and a moment of my life I want to be a mother. But there's like the woman that do the hairstyle like asking, it's your baby? I was like, oh, no, that's not. And a lot of people, when my parents, with my sister and me, we walk in to go there, a lot of friends for my dad asking, it's your baby? For my sister and me, it's like, no, it's my cousin. I believe that you have a baby. It's like, oh no, I'm okay right now, thank you.
No, thanks.
Yeah.
We're going to go to another song, and we'll be right back to talk a little bit more about the Colombian context.
I'll be so much stronger.
was Meet Me at Our Spot, probably one of my most listened to songs of a year ago or 2 years ago, whenever it came out, I'm not quite sure. I listened to that on repeat. What a vibe.
Does it have a video?
I think so. It does have a video, and it has a live video as well.
I feel like I remember it from TikTok a few years ago.
Same. It's like a catch a vibe, but then I didn't remember what song it was.
And we are back here on Mirrored Voices. Now we'll turn to Colombia, which we've mentioned a little bit already.
Yeah.
But Mariana, help us understand a little bit more about female empowerment or women's rights, women's independence here.
Yeah, well, in Colombia, women and girls continue to suffer, like, poverty. In the statistics, the women suffer more poverty than the men. So there's, like, a lot of people that not have a job. And in that situation, it's the woman that not have, the, like, the same opportunity like the man. That's not a surprise. That's something that we know. But that happened in Colombia, that the last 4 years, we have a mayor here in Bogota, Claudia López Michel, said that. And I guess in Colombia was the first woman. But we have, like, re-election and all these things, like, election again, and any woman to be, like, able to vote in Bogota to be a mayor. With the president was different because we have Francia Márquez, like, an option, but later Petro won. So Petro chose Francia Márquez for vice president. But in the politics, I guess, in the Congress, we have women. But it's so sad because we have more women that support, like, the right for the country. So it's more like the people that have money. Because it's so funny for me because that people public a lot of videos on Twitter and said, like, because we are not have water in Bogota, it's fault for Petro. Because Petro do this thing. It's like,
he stopped the rain, yeah.
Yeah, he choose, like, not have water for Colombia. So that idea, so it's difficult because they're, like, that woman in the power, it's not trying to help a lot of women. We have, in the pandemic, we have a difficult situation because obviously we have a lot of people that not continue job, having a job because they were every day in the street selling different things. So that's, in that moment we have Duque, like, president, and he trying to, like, do, like, a lot, like, the things selling more expensive than the normal. And obviously, the most a difficult situation for the woman than more than the man. And obviously, there's a lot of families that the mother is the only one that have money to bring their kids and obviously need to do a lot of things. So the situation with the woman, it's difficult because right now we are trying to find, like, a law to trying to have a lot of women that feel so bad in the menstruation because that happened to us. But obviously there's a lot of factories that decide not like take a woman in the job. Because they said, like, you're going to take 1 day or 2 days to demonstration. If you get pregnancy, you're going to need take more time, and I'm going to pay you, and you're not going to continue job. So that's why a lot of factories said, like, I'm going to give the opportunity for the men, because they not get pregnancy, they not get menstruation, so that ideas. With the women, it's difficult because we have a lot of feminicides continue. And obviously we have a law about the feminicide that was Rosalvira Celi, that the concept for that woman is so difficult because she was studying psychology in our university. She go out late and she go for a national park, Parque Nacional, and one of the partners of the university take her, rape and all these things. So obviously this notice for Bogota was so difficult and for Colombia was so difficult because it was like the first woman that they took like a feminicide, nor like a well, here we call crimen pasional,
crime of passion, yeah,
something like that, and that's continue happen. And that's like the women, we not have the same opportunity to put like trying to use the law for yourself, because I listen a lot of women say like, I wanna like take a decent for my boyfriend because he's so aggressive. But if you go there and trying to talk with the people, they ask you, are you okay? You go to the psychologist. Are you really think that he's gonna hurt yourself? And all these things. So it's so difficult for the woman trying to have like a future, because obviously there's a lot of women that said, I'm trying to do all the legal process, but that's not working.
That's so interesting, because like there was a case in 2021, I think, in the UK. A woman called Sarah Everard was murdered by a serving police officer who arrested her, well, pretended to arrest her in order to capture her, rape her, murder her. And it was, the reason it was such a big case was like kind of like the similar one that you mentioned, was that this was a woman who was clearly like taking a lot of precautions to be safe at night. So she had really bright clothes on, she kept in the streets, and you know, the people that were supposed to trust, the police, a policeman had taken advantage of her. But then I think the reason it was so significant was that it sparked a conversation in the UK about what it is to be a woman, and about the fact that you cannot walk home from your friends, because that's what she was doing. She's walking home from her friend's house to her house, and this had happened, and how it's not just, you know, crimes of passion. It's calculated and cold, and you can just be walking in the street. And again, it was so frustrating that it was like, this is 2021 and we're still having to tell men that we can't walk home at night. Yeah. Like, how is this a conversation?
And obviously there's like a lot of men that don't believe that we not feel
you're
safe in the street.
You're sensitive. Yeah.
Because I study for Transmilenio, like the big factory of the public transport here in Bogota, trying to ask the woman, do you feel safe in Transmilenio? Like the 95% of women said no, because you don't know what happened in Transmilenio. Because I guess I come in a Saturday morning and a man be in front of me. Obviously, he not do anything, because I saw him all the time, but I was so alert, like, okay, I need to be safe. I need to be, like, open mind, like, what is going on, because I know the people in the public transport, it's not doing anything. Obviously, there's, like, a lot of women screaming, and the man is like, no, it's nothing happened. And also the woman, but if you, like, trying to help that woman, you know what is happened to you. So that meant for me, I'm trying to, like, fix the pants. And I was like, oh, my God, I don't want to fight. I don't want this happening in the Saturday morning. I have a good energy. And in my case, I say something. I have friends that feel so scared and don't say something. I happened to my friend of the university that, like, a drunk guy was so close and trying to kiss her. And she was calling me crying. I was like, I want to take this man and scream, because the people don't do anything. So it's like a study. I don't know if that's going to happen, to have the option in a, like in a part of the Transmilenio, just the woman be there, not men. We are not going to accept a man. But that happened in Mexico too.
Yeah.
But there's not this like a old man not have the opportunity to take the other part and go in the part of the woman, and the woman starts screaming, and obviously there's a lot of people saying this man is don't do anything. But it's a difficult situation, because I take Transmilenio every day of my life. I don't want to, but I don't have other option. But there's a lot of people, and obviously there's like moment that you need to push the people, because you need to go to the Transmilenio. So how you're going to do if you have two options for woman and men and just one for woman? If a lot of women said, like, I feel saved, but it's just like 5% or 2%.
It also defeats the point of what we're trying to talk about, is that we want independence.
We want
to be able to live our lives free of needing a man. Like, I think I was talking to you, Hannah, and I was saying, like, really, I don't feel like I need a man for anything in my life that isn't to fulfill it, to earn money, to whatever, apart from probably to make me feel more safe around other men, which is kind of the problem, is that to be independent, are any of us really independent mm-hmm. when we're still having to like watch ourselves when we're on the bus? Like mm-hmm. that's the whole yeah. point of the yeah, conversation is that we want to just take the bus and not
it's so difficult because I have a person that tell me that every day she take the Transmilenio was the same man like pushing her, and in a moment the man said, if you come again I'm gonna kill you.
Oh my God.
So what you are gonna do? Because it's exactly that Transmilenio stops so like short. So it's like you not take fast, like go down and trying to find other, because it's so long the travel. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what I'm gonna do? Because I have family that said it's not good you to eat Transmilenio. But what I'm gonna do? I now have a lot of money to pay a car because mm-hmm. I'm in danger in a car, because that happened a lot of women taking a Uber, a Didi or mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. like the man that is the driver, like rape you. So we really don't know what is better in Bogota, because it's just in Bogota. We don't know in Medellin. We don't know in Cali. We don't know in Barranquilla.
In London, in New York, in
yeah,
everywhere.
Yeah. But here, like, city like Barranquilla and La Costa, like, the families continue not be able to talk about feminists. Mm-hmm. And that's so hard because we are crazy. Because you believe that the woman not, like, have other things that get married. Hmm. So that's happened with the culture. So there's a lot of men and a lot of women, like, old women. I have a lot of problems in the Transmilenio with the old woman. Because they're, like, in a something happened to me that she told me, but it's your fault how it get dressed. I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not talking about the sweater that you have, it's so ugly that you don't have the opportunity to talk to, like, the things that I'm put on me, in my body. Because I'm not feeling scared to answer, because for all my life, I take public transport. Mm-hmm. I start take bus, like, 7 years old. Mm-hmm. So I know how that works, but a woman that it's, like, the first time for her is so difficult trying to answer. And obviously I have my friend like, shut up. I was like, no, that's not fair. But yeah, I guess it's like a difficult situation in Colombia, because we are women, but we are not safe. And we are obviously continue fighting to we have no more feminicides, because right now we are in a complicated situation, because every week appear more notice that a woman was killing in Colombia. And we don't know more, because obviously not all the women appear in the notice. So, yeah, it's difficult.
Before we run out of time for today's program, I found something that I've been noticing a lot more on social media that I want to bring up as part of this conversation. Not a solution by any means to any of these issues, but there's an interesting trend talking about microfeminisms. So we've talked on this program before about microaggressions or micromachismos, those, like, not outright offensive, but jokes or behaviors or certain things that when you take a second to really analyze them, it's really based in misogyny or sexism and things like that. And there are people who are, you know, what's your microfeminism act that, you know, makes you feel rebellious, or is a way not to put down men, but to challenge some of those, you know, patriarchal norms. So some women have talked about, when I'm writing an email for work to a group of people, I always put the women first because they're so often, you know, excluded or forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
Or lawyers or real estate agents or people, you know, forming contracts for especially like a couple, in this case a heterosexual couple, buying a house. Yeah. I'll put her name first on the contract instead of his name. It makes absolutely no difference. Both names are on the contract. It really doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But people get so used to men being the landowners, being the one who are buying property. And I think one person commented, I had someone ask me to change it because they wanted the husband's name to be first. That was so important to them.
That's continue happen.
Or things like not having male be the automatic gender. So like if you don't know someone's gender, like, oh, talk to the doctor, see what she says.
Yeah.
Or, oh, talk to your boss and tell me what she says. Or, you know, if you don't know what the gender of the person is, make female your baseline. Yeah. And then when you learn, you know, what, how they identify, use the correct pronouns. But we're so often, and especially in Spanish, because it's a much more gendered language, mm-hmm. where we're still used to, like, the automatic, the natural is masculine until you specify feminine. Mm-hmm. And so doing, like, changing that kind of language or talking to men in a similar way that you would talk to women or things like that as a way of, like, going up against a little bit, pushing back.
Yeah. I like the one where you, and I've done it before, and it's actually crazy how often I've nearly been walked into, is, like, not moving. So if you and a man are walking towards each other on the path and there's not space for two of you, like, automatically so many women will, like, step to the side, but I just, like, stand there and I'm like, are you going to bump into me? Or
you can move too.
Exactly.
Or I remember doing this once where a man cut across my friend, my female friend, mm-hmm. and I literally was like, Ingrid, my friend was talking. And he looked so, he was like, sorry? And I was like, she was talking and you interrupted her. And that's one of my favorites as well. Because I feel like many men don't even realize they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And then you point it out and
that's
they're
the
like,
thing.
Really shocked.
Yeah, I feel proud because my parents said, like, a table. And the people go to pay, and the person is going to pay is going to give the money to my dad. Mm-hmm. And my mom was like, no, it's mm-hmm. my money.
Yeah.
And the man's like, yeah, and give my dad. And my mom was like, no, it's my money because it was my table.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's my mom. Because that happened a lot of here, that if you do a business, the money is for the man, not for the woman. So that idea, like, trying to change, so I feel so proud to my mom, because the man was like, okay, this is yours, like, so mad, and I was like, I don't care, it's for my mom. Yeah, so that idea, to try to change that things, it's good, it's like a little step, but that it continue working for other people to understand that.
Yeah, it's a way to at least try to get out of the habit of assuming, you know, these gender roles or this, you know, patriarchal way of thinking. Certainly not going to solve all of the problems we've talked about today. But I think it's an interesting step, like a little daily reminder of things you can do to challenge the patriarchy. And so that will be your homework for this week. find ways to incorporate microfeminisms in your daily life, however that looks like for you. And feel free to share with us, send a message into the radio station or on social media, or tune in next week and tell us, you know, what your microfeminism actions were. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Michelle, Mariana, Phoebe, and everyone listening. We hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you, Hannah. Bye, everyone.
Thank you.
Nets and some black boots, nose pierced with the cigarette perfume. Half dead, but she still looks so cute. She is a monster in disguise, and she knows all the words to the trap songs. Takes pics with a cherry red lipstick, that she only dates guys with the big.
can hear.